I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Tommy Tiernan podcast. And today, I'm going to be talking about Yiddish folktales. I remember many, many years ago, I was talking to a really, really old Jewish rabbi. And he said, it was Jackie Mason. And I bumped into him, myself and the wonderful Dylan Moran and Ard Lohanan, and we were in New York City. And Jackie Mason is one of the all-time great comedians, got marvelous rhythm and punctuation and ideas, and when he's on stage he's absolutely fearless. And I think he was studying to be a rabbi or something, or but he has that kind of marvelous Jewish beat, kind of "Hey, do you say, hey, do you the Coca-Cola, put the fingers, what the. And when a god like that walks past you, we were in a cafe and he walked past myself and Dylan. Ardle was far too cool, but myself and Dylan just bolted like children out of a primary school. And we went up and we said hello to him, and he said, "Hi, you know, I'm a millionaire." We invited him. He had a beautiful young lady with him, and he was about 900 years old. And we said, you know, we're doing a show in the town hall in New York. Even New York is a fucking town hall, like Claire Morris and Westport. And said, we're doing a show in the town hall. Like, are you free of a night to come? Why would I come and see your show? I'm a millionaire. Look at this broad. I'm 900 years old. Why would I want to go? I'd be a huge fan of Jewish comedy, you know. Cultural diversity is a fantastic thing. All immigration is built on sorrow. People more or less usually have to leave places because they're being hounded out of it, they're being sold, or they're being hunted. You know, and while the initial thing is awful, the results of it can be beautiful. It's not the queer thing of it, like, if it wasn't for slavery, would we have jazz? You know, if Richard Pryor's great-great-great-grandfather hadn't been sold to some fat fucker in Alabama, would he have been a stand-up comedian way back in Nigeria or something, you know? He might have been a Nigerian storyteller or something, but he wouldn't be a gift to Western culture. He wouldn't be one of the shite. I meant to say bright and shining. So one of the shite and brining lights of world stand-up comedy. You know, if Bob Dylan's great grandparents hadn't fled Eastern Europe, the most that he could have hoped for in terms of international fame would have been to represent Lithuania in the Eurovision Song Contest. Before everybody call him a babe. And if Irish people hadn't been starved out of their own land, I mean, would there have been the Smiths, Morrissey? It's hard to know what the great gifts of Irish immigration are to world culture. But anyway, I'm talking to this really old rabbi one time in a monastery in Oxford. Now, when I say me, I don't actually mean me. This is anything I read or hear or see on television that I'm experiencing, to me it's the same as if I'm actually there in the place where the thing is happening. So, I was in a monastery in Oxford in the late 1980s talking to... I spent a few years living as a Carmelite monk. And I got talking to this old Jewish rabbi. We were washing dishes one evening. And after the... We'd have bonging between 6 and 8, which is... we just go in and... It's an old Carmelite tradition of prayer where you would... You'd be hoisted up on a rope and you'd have a little helmet on and you'd be clattered off either side of this massive bell, which the sound of which would echo throughout the town. So you'd be bonged. You could only imagine tolerate one or two bongs a month after that. It's an awful dose to the skull. But anyways, I said to this wonderful old man, you know, and I think... We're all Jewish. The Western imagination, in as much as it is Greek and Roman and Celtic and Christian, it is also Jewish in the way that the African imagination may not be Jewish, but the Western is taught to be a Christian is to be a Jew. Christianity is a Yiddish folktale. Anyway, I'm talking to this guy, wonderful, and I says to him, what is Jewish theology? And he said, hey, well, he said, Tommy, we don't have theology in Judaism. We have stories. That is all we have. And that's a marvellous way to be in the world. It's just, you're not coming up with something. Now, I know there's the Ten Commandments and stuff like that, but you're not really coming up with rules. You're just coming up with stories that are up for interpretation. There is no definite truth out of a story. It's just what it means to you. And sometimes what it means to you mightn't be what it means to the teller. My father, every evening, when I was from the age of about 5 until I was about 5 and a quarter, he used to tell me the story of Jack and the Beanstalk, and he had no idea what I drew from that. Here was a young fella who broke every rule. The father gone, their mother and himself starving, and their last bit of collateral on the planet. He is to take the cow into town and come back with money so they can fucking eat. And he goes off. His mother has placed total responsibility for the family's survival on his young and slender shoulders. He's a mile gone from the house, and who does he meet by the side of the road but some fucking gypsy magician. And he swaps the cow for magic fucking beans. Then he goes up into the sky the following day when the stork is after appearing in the garden and the beans thrown out the window the previous night by the mother disgusted at him. And he goes into a giant's house and he steals. He doesn't ask any fucking borrow. He robs the magic chicken from the tall man in the sky. And eventually, they all lived happily ever after, apart from the giant who was killed and the cow who ended up a jacket. But I heard this story over and over and over again. And this story, the effect it had on me was, I have spent my entire life robbing chickens. No, I have spent, and I think it's why I'm a Christian, because I always have an eye out for the gypsy with the magic fucking beans. I'm not a realist at all. My sister, on the other hand, had the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears read to her every evening, and she grew up to become a sex worker at the zoo. So different things manifest differently in different people. And there is such heart and such sorrow in the tales of the Hasidim, or Yiddish folk tales. There's such mystery, there is such sadness, really. Irish storytelling is wonderful, the folk tales that we have. It's all Cuchulain and fish and magic horses and crows that'd kill you and lifting up Loch Ness and turning it into the Isle of Man. And it's a world of magic. It's a world of shapeshifters. But to be a storyteller of any type in the Western world is to be Jewish, is to be Irish. I mean, the closest I've ever come to working with Jewish culture before was when I worked in a supermarket when I was 19, and it used to make me laugh, and I don't think anybody else ever got the joke or even saw it, but I used to be in charge of stacking the cat food cans, and I would position the beef and rabbit tins so that it looked as if the kittens were having a feast of beef and rabbi. I mean, it made me laugh. It wasn't picked up by anybody else. And there's a great phrase in the Irish language that I think could very swiftly be assimilated and probably has its brother in Yiddish. In Irish, it says, "O wurch agna, from the hurt mind." And I think that's a very Jewish, a very human state of being. I have an issue with not belonging. I find it very difficult to accept. It bothers me when a group of people would say, "You're not one of us," because I feel as if I have more in common with people than I do the opposite of in common. It's why I'm drawn to lesbians and Jewish people and Africans. I want to belong. I want to be a black Jewish lesbian in a wheelchair who's also non-binary and a Republican and who supports Chelsea. I just don't like that exclusion. You don't belong here. You're not one of us. I refuse to accept that. I say, no, I know I might look like a 51-year-old west of Ireland white Gemini, but scratch the surface. Scratch the surface. I think we all belong, and it's why some people don't want to hear that, you know. It was why last year I released a charity single that nobody bought. I'll give you a blast of it now. It went a little bit like this. What if Trump was one of us? Just a stranger on the bus.
trying to make his way home. Like the Pope may be in Rome.
People didn't like the idea that Trump could be human. I even offered it to a group here, the Galway Black Lesbians in Wheelchairs from Israel. But we didn't see eye to eye at all. I've only really once in my life encountered a type of racism, and it was only a moment, and the two young people who were racist towards me, they mightn't have stayed that way, you know. But anyway, this is the story of that particular incident and how I got out of it. I was doing a show in New York, and New York is a buzzing city, you know, and I was actually performing Lenny Bruce, one of my icons in stand-up comedy. Alfred Schneider, I think, was his real name. Anyway, he such beautiful rhythm and drama, and his talk was full of kind of Yiddish beat, jazz, heroin, New York slang, and it was just, he told amazing stories. And I was performing in a room that he had performed in New York in the 1960s, and I was just buzzing off the vibe of the streets and hoping that I was bringing something new to New York comedy from an Irish perspective, you know. Now, some nights it didn't go well, you know. I remember one night performing in front of an entirely black audience, head to foot. They were each and every one of them was totally fucking black, like. They were entirely, and they liked my stuff, except when I was talking about Jesus. You know, they're laughing at the family stuff, laughing at the sex stuff, but they really weren't going to row the God boat with me at all. So anyway, this particular night, this other night, I used to do this joke. I says, the Jews, you have to move towards the tension. I think that's the thing with comedy, is that wherever you sense tension. Like, I'd often be performing up in Vicar Street or something, and there might be a person in a wheelchair in the front row or something. And if they're, sometimes you get people who, in wheelchairs, who they might have cerebral palsy or something like that, and they're making a noise out of sync with the rest of the crowd, you know. So you'd be telling a joke, and before you get to the punchline, you'd hear this kind of cerebral palsy moan or something like that. And all of a sudden the room would get tense. And so naturally, I go there. I would say, who's making that fucking noise? Look at that bastard in the wheelchair. Not as crude as that, but you'd be trying to do it in such a way that the tension is released. And that the person in the wheelchair, most importantly, finds it funny. That some weird way, by you pointing it out and celebrating it by taking the piss out of it, has somehow been a release. You never know, but you know, they keep coming back. Anyways, I'm there in New York one night, and I used to do this bit. This is 20 years ago now, maybe. Oh, you know, the Irish people were like the Jews, but not as focused. I mean, you do something to a Jewish person and they fucking remember. It could be 45 years later and you're having a double espresso macchiato in a restaurant in Argentina, and this little old lady comes up and she points, you son of a bitch. So that was the kind of the vague setup of it. And then I would ramble on a bit in that kind of vein, and then I'd get to the bit, and the Jews say they didn't kill Jesus. And I go, well, it wasn't the fucking Mexicans. A joke. Now, as it happened, quite an old joke. I have this book of jokes put together by a wonderful science fiction writer called Isaac Asimov. And I remember coming up with that joke myself, well, it wasn't the fucking Mexicans. But it just shows you there's nothing really original in the world. I came across a Jewish version of it in that book, basically laying the blame on the Puerto Ricans. There'd be a South American tribe who loves stout, the Puerto Ricans. I was telling those stories on the stage in New York anyway. And afterwards, and there were fine, there were actually physically gorgeous specimens of human being. A young guy and a young girl in about their early 20s. Just so beautiful. And what I remember most about him, the guy, was his eyes. They were so fucking clear and without doubt. They're the fuckers you can't trust. Never trust a cunt with clarity. They're dangerous. So he says to me, I was at your show. I says, yeah, yeah, okay. He says, I think some of your stuff was anti-Semitic. You know, I think you're a racist. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he says, that joke you told about, did the Jews crucify Jesus? Well, it wasn't the Mexicans, you know. And I said, well, hey, it's just a joke. It's not meant to be taken seriously. And then he said to me, yeah, well, I wouldn't expect you to know any better. You're Irish. And it was the first time I'd ever felt that kind of racist poke at me. I mean, I've had it once in a comedy club in London by these, you know, drunken East Enders, but, you know, it's rare because fuckers are rare. Bad bastards are rare. There really isn't too many of them about. This guy said to me, this New York guy said, I'm Jewish and I think you're racist and you wouldn't know any better because you're Irish. And I had to think fast, didn't I? You know, I could have just kind of shrugged my shoulders and walked off, which is what I did in reality. But looking back on it now, as I reimagine it, and that's the gift of the human imagination, is to go back and change the past. Looking back on it now, with his beautiful young face, such beautiful, clear, healthy skin, and eyes burning with a kind of righteous assuredness. And when I go back to that moment, I act quick. Before I have time to shrug my shoulders and walk off, before he has time to turn on his heels and walk away feeling as if he stood up for his people, I grab him. I put a hand on either side of his gorgeous face and I kiss him. I just fucking munge into the lovely Jewish head in him, and I'm fucking, it's happening so quick he doesn't have time to protest, and part of him maybe is half enjoying it. I'm kissing him and I'm kissing him, but I have an agenda. It's not just for the munge that I'm doing it. As I'm kissing him, through my saliva, part of my DNA goes into his body forever. And maybe in years to come, when my small bit of DNA has travelled down his body and settled into his ball bag, and deep into his marriage, it'll sperm out of him into his magnificent wife, and she'll give birth to a little Irish child who one day will be given a serious message to do by his serious family. Maybe go down to the shops and buy something, and he'll come back with a handful of magic beans that he bought off the fucking gypsy. Well, that's about it for today, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed this week's uneducated ramble through stuff I don't really know an awful lot about. Thanks for listening. See you next time. This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.